Lo, this year, as always, is Yilui Nishmas, Rachalei Bas of Chaim Tzvi. All of these shiurim should be an aliyah to her neshama. It's quite something to think what's happening for her as you listen. In any case, today what we're going to be talking about is Tu B'Shvat. So the first thing we have to talk about when speaking about Tu B'Shvat is what is it really? Okay, the Mishnah tells us that there are four times of the year that could be called Rosh Hashanah. Now, of course, we're familiar with Rosh Hashanah for us, when Hashem judges every human being. Why are we concerned with Rosh Hashanah for trees? So the idea, in a simple sense, is that in Halacha, when the Beis HaMikdash was still standing, it was relevant to be able to have an arbitrary time when we'll count the life of a tree. The reason for this was there are different halachot that have to do with trees in terms of Shemitah, in terms of Neter Avai, where you have to say a tree age, the other age, is obligated in this, that, and the other gift. But clearly, there's more there, because the Beis HaMikdash is no longer with us. Yet we find in the Sifrei Halacha, not only in the Sifrei Kabbalah, as some people mistakenly think, but in Kri Megadim, in Shulchan Aruch Harav, that Tu B'Shvat is mentioned. So why are we concerned with this? So we're going to approach this question from several different angles. Okay, one angle is that a person is compared to a tree. Let's look at what a tree actually is. It has roots. It has a trunk. It has branches that grow upward, and fruit. So, the first thing I'm going to talk about, as I said, we're going to angle, is what Rav Chal says about the difference between Jews and other people. So he speaks about the era before Avraham as the era of roots, meaning that people were defining reality in those early generations. Then you have Avraham coming on the scene and giving definition to what the world is in a way that nobody had before him. Now the fact is, of course, Adam knew Hashem, certainly Noach knew Hashem. Noach was a tzaddik. But nobody knew Hashem the way Avram did. Meaning Avram saw that the earth itself nurtures spiritual growth. So unlike other spiritual thinkers of his time, even such as Metushelach, who abandoned the world to live the life of a hermit, Avram said, you know, this world could be uplifted. This world could be something. So from Avram we get the trunk, the visible side of spiritual progression. But what you find then is that not everyone followed this path. So, they followed the path of their own roots, their own perceptions. Different trees were grown. So what you have is that from Avram's tree comes branches and sub-branches, but they're all part of one reality. So the Jewish people have a distinct reality, even though at the beginning, anyone could have adhered to the truth to this tree in the era of roots. So what does this mean concretely? Sometimes we have doubts about what our identity is. There are Jews who are so involved in Judaism that it defines every moment of their day. And there are people who are so distant that they're like a top branch on the tree that you could crack it off and the tree itself seems fine. But the idea is that we are one people and we all draw our spiritual energy from one source. So when you're talking from that perspective about the Rosh Hashanah of trees, in many ways it's the Rosh Hashanah of our identity, which requires our thought on this day, taking this idea a bit deeper. Again, roots, trunk, fruit. What's a person's roots? So some of our roots are our history in the past. Some of the roots, however, are meant to be the inherent emunah that the Baal HaTanya says is the ultimate definition of what every Jew is. So he points out that what we see historically is that sometimes there were Jews who gave their lives, which isn't a simple thing, who gave their lives to remain Jewish, who were simple people. So, you know, if you were to take the whole cast of Fiddler on the Roof, realize Muttel the Tailor, the whole bunch of them, even the socialist, they all could have made their lives easier by converting to the Eastern Church. And they wouldn't have had to have been religious or devout. They could have said a few words and it would all be over. All the persecutions, the pogroms, the horror. They didn't do it. So the answer there is that there's something within us that gives us a desire for connection, a desire for tikkun. That part of us can't be denied. So a person should become, ideally, more and more aware of the part of them that's kulo emuna, that's completely emuna. And as we say in the High Holiday Tefillah, v'chol maminim, everyone believes. So you have your uncle Herbert the atheist, he also believes. And I want to give you a proof of this. If you were to push Herbert the atheist to a wall and ask him whether he believes that there should be morality, he'll say yes, which means on some level he believes in accountability. Take note. Now, emuna, if it's real, is going to show itself. It's going to show itself in a person's way of thinking and in everything they do. So that's the trunk. When you look at a tree, what you see most is the trunk and its branches. You don't see the roots. The roots are underground. So what do we look like? In the Torah it says, Adam etz hasadeh, a person is like a tree of the field. Now it doesn't say this in a philosophical sense. It says, don't cut the trees of a city when you're besieging it. But a person is like a tree in that regard. So you have to look, what do I really look like? So when do you do this? When do you think about this? So obviously it's good to think about every day, to make cheshbon nefesh every day. But every so often you could do this more than at other times. This is one of them. Then you have the fruit. The fruit doesn't benefit the tree. It benefits others. But everything about the tree, its roots, its cellulose, everything about it is enacted in order to produce fruit. So similarly, this is therefore also a question, what's my fruit? How am I affecting the world? If I wasn't in the world, what would change? Now, a person's good deeds are called their fruit. Okay, a person's effect on others is called their fruit. But more than anything, a person's speech is called their fruit. The word for expression, niv, is the same word as bud. You are what you say to a very large degree. Something to think about. Let's look at another angle. Another angle is that what do you do on Tu B'Shvat? So it says you should pray for Kosher Esrog. Okay? Sukkot is a long time from now. In fact, I don't even want to think about Pesach, which is not in such a long time, but certainly Sukkot is far. So conceptually, why would we be thinking of this? So let's go back to what we said a few moments ago about the unity of the Jewish people. The four species that are taken on Sukkot are reflective of different sorts of Jews, and many of you are familiar with this remez. You have the person who studies but has no good deeds, the person who has good deeds but doesn't study, the person who does neither, okay, the person who does both. We're all part of the same thing. Just as different limbs and organs are part of the same body. Hence, the parallel remez, the parallel hint, is that the lulav is like the spine, and the hadasim are like the eyes, and the aravos are like the lips, but the esrog is like the heart. So in order to have any emuna, and in order to have any sensitivity towards the unity of the Jewish people, the place that you have to find this is within the heart, not just within the mind. So it's very easy to intellectually believe, but not to believe in your heart. If you believe in your heart, it affects what you say and what you do. If you believe in Achdus Yisrael, it affects how you speak to your friend, and how you speak to someone who is not your friend. How you treat them. Do you retreat into otherness? Do you retreat into the headset of, this isn't one of us? Or do you see each Jew really as part of you, just as much as every part of your body is part of one body? So we're tying Tu B'Shvat down then to a certain degree, in a certain sense, to Sukkos. Okay, something that Tu B'Shvat has in common with Sukkos is that they're both the 15th of the month. So what? Okay. So the number 15 is a very important symbolic number in Judaism. Let's look at it. Okay, we're going to look at it in terms of the number's value and then in terms of the letters. Let's look at the number value, 15. Okay, when you look at the arc, what you see is that everything is multiples of 15. When you look at the Beis HaMikdash, you'll see that there were 15 steps joining the sections of the Beis HaMikdash, connecting Ezras Nashim with Ezras Yisrael. The male and the female are connected through 15. And on each one of these steps, there were those who would be singing in the Beis HaMikdash, the Levium, the Shir HaMalos, the songs of the steps. What's that about? So the number 15 is meant to convey the idea of 10 and 5. 10 and 5 what? So now we have to go into the letters. It says in Navi, in Yeshaya, Ki baka Hashem tzur olamim. Hashem formed worlds with the letters Yud and He. Yud is the letter that's the symbol of Olam Haba. He is the letter of this world, Olam Hazeh. How so? So Yod is the letter that's meant to convey to the idea to us the idea of the flash of creativity with which Hashem began his process of being a creator. Okay, so it's above the line, not on the line. And from there come the 10 statements of creation, let there be this, let there be that, each of which is meant to, in a certain sense, tell Hashem's story. So the 10 statements of creation parallel the 10 Sefirot. And as history comes on, Hashem shows himself as not only the creator, but as wanting to move us back to that moment where his unity was observable and clear. He did this through the 10 plagues, through the 10 commandments, the 10 constant miracles of the temple. That's Yud. So let's look at Yud a little bit more carefully. What we see is a dot. We see a line moving upward and a line moving downward. So the line moving upward is telling us that whatever we see, whatever we conceive of being divine wisdom, we don't see. There's more above that that dwarfs our imagery. There's also a line below. We're supposed to nonetheless take the imagery that we have and address it to what we see moment by moment. So it means when you look at reality, day by day as it unfolds, you should be looking for Hashem's creativity. Which takes us to the letter He. The letter He, now in Hashem's name there are two He's. We're speaking about the first He. The first He is a symbol of Hashem taking this creative spark and addressing it downwards till he's in this world. So the He is a letter with 2 feet firmly on the floor. And remember, the He is open on bottom. The world Hashem created is a world in which descent is possible. The hay is opened on the side. Re-entry is possible. Tshuva is possible. So hay is used as a symbol of tshuva. Hay ila'a, the first hay, the symbol of this world being distant from Hashem, but a place that we could return to Hashem. So if yud is a symbol of chachma, the spark of creative energy from which everything comes, hay is the symbol of bina, of Hashem bringing things into focus, making something that could be understood and discussed. So the realm of Bina is often referred to as Olam HaKiseh, the world of the divine throne where Hashem is involved and removed at the same time from his creation. So Yud is the letter of the other world, the transcendental letter, and He is the letter of this world, the immanent letter. What does this have to do with anything, you may be wondering by now? So the idea is as follows. Yud is the letter that's meant to symbolize the masculine element, that which gives forth. He, 2 feet on the floor, concrete, is meant to represent the female element, that which takes in and creates. So Yud and He, male and female, transcendental reality and immanent reality. We were talking about unity. There has to be unity between Yud and He. So now let's relate this, the idea of this world and the other world being united all of the time, to something interesting that the Ramchal says. Most of us who are observant, see reality thus. This world is very short, the 70, 80, 90, 100 years, 120 years. How long is it? Then you have Olam Haba, that's eternity. So this world is the foyer that leads to Olam Haba, the great hall. And that's, we don't think that much further. Ramchal, however, did. He would say that the Olam Haba is, so to speak, to use his words, this is such a radical idea, I would never say these words, but Ramchal said them. He said, Olam Haba is like a storage house. It's a waiting area. What's next? What's next is Techiyat HaMeitim, the revival of the dead, where the soul and body will be reunited once more. But this time not oppositionally, not the body wants this and the soul wants that. No, with absolute harmony and unity. So the goal is the unity of Yud and He. So let's move this into the idea of there being holidays. Because every place where in Mishnah and the Gemara it says Chag, it means Sukkos. A holiday is a place of meeting. The word Chag, Rav Hirsch said, is like the word Chug, a circle. In ordinary Hebrew today, we'll talk about the word chug meaning club, like a drawing circle, an English circle, whatever. It shows that the unending wheel of life, which begins with Hashem's will and touches us and reintroduces us to Hashem's will, is something that takes place on every holiday. So now we understand Sukkos, but what does this have to do with Tu B'Shvat? So Tu B'Shvat, which is the time that the sap that's within the earth rises and gives life to the tree, is this place of meeting. The tree is becoming alive once more. But the influence that makes this happen is, of course, Hashem's giving. So you have Yud and He meeting. What does this have to do with our identity and with the Esrog? The place of meeting within us is the heart. So even though the mind is the repository of the neshama, it's higher than the heart and should control the heart. The heart is very much that which connects the mind to the body. So when you pray for a good esrog, you're praying for connection and for passion. You want something more. Now all of this has to do specifically with Eretz Yisrael, because as we said at the beginning, the halachot of Tu B'Shvat, having to do with the tree's actual age, can only be observed in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the place of this kind of meeting. A meeting of heaven and earth. A meeting of Yud and He. Because of this, it's referred to in Tehillim as Eretz HaChayim, the place that's alive. What does that mean? Los Angeles is dead? Muncie is dead? Lake? What does it mean? What it means is that there's no place in the world, nor will there ever be any place in the world, in which the flow from above will ever be as visible and accessible as Eretz Yisrael, thus necessitating a different level of response from below. So Eretz Yisrael is the heart of the world. Eretz Yisrael is the Esrog. Eretz Yisrael is the heart of the world. The author of the Kuzari wrote about this extensively, and he said that's why Eretz Yisrael is the only place where prophecy consistently took place. It's the place of ultimate meeting. So you could think erroneously that that would only be true in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when the majority of Jews lived here. But no, the Kedush of Eretz Yisrael was there when Hashem told Avraham, go to leave everything and come to where I'll show you yourself. This was the place that Yitzchak called the field. This is the place that Yaakov called the home, not somewhere else. So now on Tu B'Shvat, which is very much a holiday of Eretz Yisrael, there's a custom, not halacha, to have the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. Some people will have 15 fruits on their table on Tu B'Shvat, and some people will be sure to have, within those 15 fruits, the seven species. So let's think a little bit now about the seven species and what they tell us. So let's talk first about wheat. So wheat relates to the mind. How so? It takes human intellect for wheat to produce wheat. You have to plant it and grow it and grind it, and, you know. And it's, the Gemara tells us that that a child begins his process of being a thinker in the human sense when he's old enough to eat wheat. So part of our bridge to Hashem comes through our minds. Our minds have to be active and alert. We have to be creative. We have to seek out the yud. Now let's talk about barley. Barley in earlier times was animal food. So we have to be able to take the animal self and put it in this picture as well. We can't dismiss it. One of the tragic mistakes that people make is trying to dismiss the animal self. No, the animal self is meant to be taken on the journey. So you do this by uplifting physical things, by letting your soul tell your body who to be and what to be. Let's go further. Another one of the species is figs. Okay, so the Gemara tells us, among other possibilities, that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was a fig tree. What's that about? So the idea is that a fig is a fruit that people usually eat for pleasure. So the question is, where is their greater pleasure? In good or in evil? Nietzsche used to say they're equal, that the pleasure of creativity is equaled by the pleasure of destruction, and there is something to this. Okay, so which do you feel more connected to? The moments of bad victory or the moments of good victory? For most of us, it's close. But we have to bring it all into the same process of growth. We have other fruits. We have the pomegranate. So, in Shir HaShirim, the Jews are compared to a pomegranate, and we say, why? What's the basis of this comparison? The basis of the comparison is that every Jew is potentially as full of mitzvot as a pomegranate is full of seeds. They're saying, really? That goes to my atheist uncle Hubert. He was Herbert a minute ago. Okay, so we're talking about potential. So it means that every Jew's soul is constructed in a way in which, if he's reached in the right way, and if he's addressed the right way, the mitzvahs will resonate. Now, the mitzvahs primarily, although there are also duties of the heart, most of the mitzvahs are duties of the body. So that means that nobody could possibly keep all of the mitzvah, because physically our lives are so specific. If you're a man, you're not a woman. If you're a woman, you're not a man. If you're a Kohen, you're not a Levi. If you're a Levi, you're not a Yisrael. If you're in Chutz La'aretz, you're not in Eretz Yisrael. But if you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're not in Chutz La'aretz. If you're a king, you're not a commoner. So the idea is that the collective of Am Yisrael could do all of the mitzvot. So individually, maybe not. But collectively, maybe yes. And we have to believe in ourselves for this. Another fruit that's under study would be gefen, would be grapes. So the idea of looking at the vine, the Jews are called Hashem's vineyard. And indeed, this is one of the reasons why in a marriage ceremony, the ceremony begins with Bari Priya Gafen, they're the vineyard of Hashem, the new couple. How are we like a vineyard? So the Kuzari, the author, tells us that in order to grow wine, to make wine, you have to have the right vines, you have to have the right soil, you have to have sun, you have to have rain. So he says that For the Jews to be who we are, we have to have the right soil, which is Eretz Yisrael, and we have to have the right vines, which is the Jewish body that has within it the spark of Schus Avos that draws in our soul to these specific bodies. And we need the rain, Torah is compared to rain, because it goes from a high place down and gives us life. And we need sun, which is the enlightenment that comes through the mitzvot. And there's more. We're also compared to tamarim. To tzaddik a tamar yifrach. A tzaddik is like a tamar. A tamar is a date. How is a tzaddik like a tamar? Tzaddik is like a date. Okay, so if you think of a date tree, okay, you'll see it grows very straight, has its leaves on top. What defines a tzaddik more than anything else is his straightness. We all have different inner inclinations. Some of us are inclined towards being givers and doing, and we're people, which could easily lead to manipulation, to judgmentality, to crossing lines that shouldn't be crossed if we're not straight. Some of us are the opposite. We're justice oriented. We believe in fair and right. And, you know, if he committed the crime, we'll let him suffer because that's what society needs to function. And this could easily be translated into cruelty. A tzaddik is straight. He's straight. He's balanced. And this could only come from working on one's midas. And I want to share with you what Rambam says. Rambam tells us that nobody is perfect. I mean, not that you would need Rambam. You would need this. You only need a mirror for that. But what he says is, nobody is supposed to be perfect. We're born imperfect, so we could spend our lives becoming straight. So what life is about is becoming, and the tzaddikim are the ones who live with this. We're also compared to olives. How so? When you look at olives, what you'll see is that you have to press them to get out their oil. Until you apply pressure, the olive really has little value. So an olive is basically to show us that who we are comes forth not from times of ease, but from times of challenge. So we are the Shev Aminim. We don't only have the Shev Aminim, we are the Shev Aminim. This is who we are. So on Tu B'Shvat, we take out the fruits, and we add the others to make it up to 15, if this is what you want to do. There's no halacha requiring this. It's a time for thought and a time for joy. It's a time for being happy to be part of this whole spectrum, to be a tree growing in Hashem's orchard. It's a time of great simcha. So we should all be worthy of seeing the fruits of our labors, seeing our children, seeing our words, seeing our deeds, being reflective of the emuna that's natua, that's planted from within us. We should have a wonderful Tu B'Shvat. And don't forget, pray for a good esrog.